Listen to the Vibes.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Listen to the Vibes. I'm very happy to welcome David McBee here. Now, I love the fact he says he's a personal improvement junkie. He's also a children's book author, living and thriving with cancer, and a podcast host. So we're going to get to know David today and have a great conversation. So, David, tell us a little bit more about yourself.
I think you just nailed all my my greatest hits right there. I would say I'm a dad of two crazy amazing kids. I've got a daughter in college and a son just out of college. I'm married to the love of my life, 26 years, and for a living I'm an internet marketing consultant. But my passion is reading and writing and self-improvement, and been through a lot in the last couple of years along those lines. So that's kind of the Cliff Notes version of who David McBee is.
Well, I noticed that in your bio you talked about dealing with anger issues. Now, that led into writing the children's books?
Yeah, sometime around 2018, I don't know what happened to me. People think and would say, hey, this is one of the most positive people that they know. But I was swallowing a lot of anger issues up, just kind of just keeping them inside. And every once in a while they would explode out all over my family. And, it was a really difficult time with my family and my relationships. They didn't know which version of dad was going to come down the stairs. Was it the fun, happy, loving dad, or was it the one that was going to lose his mind over the fact that somebody left their lights on for the 80th time, or someone left shoes and socks in the middle of the clean living room, you know? And I don't know what it was that, well, actually, in hindsight, I kind of think I figured out why I was so angry. It was because I had been so enamored with self-help and self-improvement that I thought being positive all the time was the only way to be. So anytime something angered me, I would just swallow it up and I wouldn't deal with it. And I've since learned that you have to experience the anger. You have to let yourself have those feelings so that they'll go away. But back to that time, there was a real catalytic moment when I was leaving for a trip out of town and my family was sitting around the breakfast table and I was like, I'm leaving. They were like, bye. And I was like, ice cold, you know? And I was on the plane and I was thinking, they're going to leave me. You know, they've had enough of this jerk, and I've got to do something. So I committed right then and there to reading 15, 20 minutes a day from a self-improvement book of some kind, and learning the lessons from those books and applying them to my life. And I did that for about 8 months. And I chronicled that journey in my book, which is called Everyday Lessons Every Day. And it's all about the lessons I learned along the way and how it improved my relationships.
And how did spirituality fit into all this?
You know, it's funny. Spirituality really wasn't a part of my life at that time. I grew up Catholic, I was not happy with the dogmas of that religion and the things that it taught. In my 20s, I kind of walked away from it. I kind of felt like I still had kind of a relationship with God, but for a good portion of my life, God and I were not close. It wasn't until about 2 years ago when I got diagnosed with cancer that I really invited God back into my life, not as a way of saying, please heal me, but more as a way of saying that I'm so grateful for what you've given me, and I'm grateful for my healing, and my relationship with God changed very significantly during that time.
I know how that feels, man. I mean, I don't have cancer. I have another disease that's in my spine, but it seems like that was the time I got closer to him. You'd think maybe most people would be mad about that and blame God, but found this was a time that I could really talk to him, and I got closer to him.
I feel the same way. And I actually feel like I heard him for the first time, mm-hmm. you know, or her. Sometimes I call her, but I heard her voice. I heard his voice reassuring me that I was going to be okay. I started listening to K-Love. I'm not technically a Christian. I believe in God. I believe in Christ. I believe he was a master. But the music of K-Love started to really inspire me, to make me feel like God was more a part of my life.
And you talk about cancer. What type of cancer do you have, if you don't mind me asking?
No, I don't mind talking about it. So just about 2 years ago, I went in for a routine colonoscopy, and there was no sign of polyps or any colon cancer at all. But they did find this tiny little nodule, which they called it. And they were like, this is no big deal. We'll cut this out. It's probably nothing. But it turned out to be a kind of a rare cancer called neuroendocrine tumors. Mm-hmm. And this is a cancer that can appear anywhere in your neuroendocrine system. It could be in your brain. It can be in your liver. It can be in your lungs. It can be just about anywhere. It's the same cancer that took Aretha Franklin and Steve Jobs from us. And luckily, we caught it very early. I had about 12 tumors throughout my insides. My liver had a big portion of those, that's where you don't want cancer, right? And they went in, cut me open. They cut out all of those tumors, and I was cancer free for several months. And then there's a few more that have popped up since. But I've changed so many things in my life that I believe were instrumental in creating that cancer, that I'm keeping it under control. It's in remission, technically.
Is this something that you think will just totally go away, or that threat's always going to be there?
That's a good question. The doctors say it will always be there. The doctors believe that it will. One of the things my doctor said to me was, the difference between you, David, and other people is that now you know how you're going to die. I was like, wait a minute. I go jeeping in the mountains. I could roll off a cliff at any time. We do not know that it's going to be cancer. But I have read so much on longevity and healing and the placebo effect and meditation and anger management that I truly believe I'm going to beat it. And I don't care what those doctors say about how it's going to be with me forever. I just don't buy it.
You know, I've heard all kinds of success stories where doctors say this and they say that. And I think the patient's mindset has a lot more to do with what a doctor says.
Oh, well, there's no question about that. And one of the things I tell people, especially when they get a cancer diagnosis, a lot of people will call me right away, like, you've been through this. What advice do you have? And I'll say, don't ask the doctor for a prognosis. Your doctor can give you a diagnosis, but don't ask them what they think this means or how long you have. Because if you hear that, there's a very good chance you're going to believe it. You're going to buy into it. And that's going to become your reality. And I just don't think that should be a part of the healing process. You should be allowed to heal on your own without a doctor's best guess. I mean, they're doing their best. They're trying to give you, you know, comfort. Oh, you've got 3 years, you've got whatever. But I think sometimes that's out of line. I don't think that they have a crystal ball and they shouldn't really put that out there. And for all the doctors listening, I don't mean to offend you. I apologize.
Well, I want to ask you something a little deeper here, because I had gotten x-rays. It's been a little over a year ago. They found a spot on my lungs, and I've got to go back for more tests and what have you. And then I had a colonoscopy, and they found polyps and stuff. Now, that came back benign. So, but the one on my lungs, so a little more worrisome. But for me, I don't know. I accept it. You know, if I was to go tomorrow, it doesn't really bother me. But I worry more that it's affecting my family more than it affects me. How do you feel?
Sometimes feel exactly the same way. Like, I'm not afraid of death. I don't feel like I'm done here yet by any means, but yeah, I'm okay with passing and moving on to whatever that next plane of existence is, my next journey, right? But I don't want to leave my kids. I don't want to leave my wife. That's the scariest part for me. So I don't focus on that. I focus on having gratitude for the time that I have with them and trying to give them the best experience of a father and a husband that I can while we're together, in the hopes that, you know, if something were to happen to me, like I said, I could roll off a cliff on one of my Jeep adventures. I would want them to say, you know, my time with Dad was like the best time.
No, I've been watching those like murder mystery type shows where it's real life, where the cops are trying to find who killed so-and-so. And then when the family and friends talk about the person that's passed away and talk about how wonderful they were and awesome. And I told my kids, I said, you know, when I pass, you don't have to lie. You can tell them how much of an ass that I was.
No, when someone's gone, you tend to remember the best things about them. You just kind of forget all the negative stuff. But in fact, I was talking to someone here recently. They said, you know, what's one of the best ways to deal with stress and anger? And I told them, I said, there's this magic thing that we all have access to that very few of us use, and it's called gratitude. If you will focus on gratitude, it will change your mindset in an instant. And I used a funeral as an example. I said, you know, when people go to a funeral, that's one of the saddest occasions that a person could ever attend. Everyone there is sad that the person is gone. So what happens at a funeral? How do we all deal with it as a community? We talk about the things we loved about that person. We literally practice the art of gratitude at a funeral in order to make ourselves feel better about the loss and to make our friends and family feel better about the loss. And yet when we go home and we're trying to pay our bills and maybe there's not enough money at the end of the month and we're super stressed about that and we swallow that up and we feel the anger and we feel the stress, when at the same time you could be saying, I'm so grateful for electricity in my house. Yes, this bill is out of control, but wow, how difficult would life be if I didn't have electricity? You know? And you're paying these bills and it can be challenging, but at the same time, if you think about all the things that you're paying for and the value you get out of them, it just makes that task a lot easier.
Oh yeah. That's something I'm trying to teach my grandson. I'm got him where he's praying with me every night now, and he always asks me the same questions. Papa, what do I pray for? I said, well, first off, ask God to forgive you for all the things that you did bad today. He said, but you also need to thank him for everything that he's given you. And, you know, he's 4. And I was telling somebody on one of my other podcasts, he says, God, thank you for all the people and for my monster trucks.
I love that. I love that. Absolutely. We play a little game in our house, sometimes on road trips or sometimes around the dinner table. And we just call it the gratitude game. And somebody will throw out something like, hey, what are y'all grateful for that starts with the letter R? And we'll all just think about that and come up with something and share what we're grateful for and why. And, you know, it can be anything from rock and roll. You know, I love rock and roll. Why? Oh, well, because, you know, when I listen to Kiss, I want to rock and roll all night, you know, that kind of thing. Or sometimes I'll say, well, what's something you're grateful for that happened in your teenage years? Really take you back and make you think about one of those teachers that impacted you or something like that. And we can do this for a good 20, 30 minutes. And by the end of that, we're just flying high, because gratitude has changed our mind shift, or shifted our mindset from the work of the day, the stress of the day, the issues of tomorrow. And we're focused on something that really makes us all feel good. And that's, you know, something that starts with R, or something that is blue, you know?
You know, even the smallest thing, if you're thankful for it, to me, it seems like God is more willing to give more to you in your life. God, thank you that I have this cell phone, and I have Wi-Fi, and I have my computer, and I have my microphone that I can do my podcasting, that kind of thing. Doesn't your wife appreciate when you say, hey, you know what, honey, thank you for folding my socks, you know, or whatever. It might be a small thing, but to them, it's a big thing that you noticed it.
I'm telling you, Kyle, I think gratitude is a superpower. And I think so many of us take it for granted. When we could really focus on gratitude, it can change your life, can absolutely change your life. So when you're praying with your grandson tonight, ask him to, you know, thank God for something blue, or thank God for something that starts with the letter K or something like that. See how that goes. Let me know.
I will let you know. Well, I know you're thankful for reading. What got you into loving reading so much?
Actually, that goes way back to my early 20s. You know, most people after college, they stop reading, you know, and in college, hell, I didn't even read the books I was supposed to read then, you know. But after college, I became an entrepreneur, and a mentor of mine put the book How to Win Friends and Influence People in my hands. And that's an old book, Dale Carnegie, you know, it's 100 years old, but it taught me so much about relationships and valuing other people. And it really changed the trajectory of my life. And so from that moment on, I was a book junkie. I was like, where were these books, you know, when I was reading Robinson Crusoe? How did that help me, you know, Of Mice and Men? Like, I mean, granted, Of Mice and Men is a really great book, but I started embracing self-help and self-improvement books as early as my 20s. And back then, it was really all about success and entrepreneurship and business and personal development as far as like careers go. And then over time, it kind of shifted to, like I said, with my family, those books were about personal improvement. And then, like, as far as relationships go, there was a time, you know, after my wife and I had been married for about 7 years, I read Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. I read The Five Love Languages. Those totally, you know, changed the trajectory of my marriage in a positive way. So now, anytime I'm struggling, I'm like, where's a book? Where is a book? And as I was diagnosed with cancer, I started reading about cancer survivors. I started reading about longevity. I started reading about health, learning things I'd never been taught in my 50 years on this planet. Now I'm reading things about past lives, you know, what happens after death. And I don't know exactly what's motivating me to do that. Maybe I'm trying to prepare myself for the day one day, but I just feel like the wisdom of the ages already exists. It's out there, and all we got to do is pick up a book. And we can learn from our peers and our fellow humans without having to have these struggles. They've answered a lot of the questions for us.
Is that going to mean that you're going to keep writing books, or are you stopped at this one?
No, I actually am just about, I'm about 8 weeks out from publishing a new book.
Wow.
This one's kind of interesting. So let's back up. I did Everyday Lessons Every Day, kind of my self-improvement book. That's like my freshman book. It's not even that well written, honestly. People like it. It's got lots of positive reviews on Amazon. You know, I wouldn't say it's my best work, but it was from the heart, right? And then after that, I wrote three children's books. And those children's books are all about, your grandson likes monster trucks. My children's books are about trucks and Jeeps and cars and like going off-road and learning lessons and things like that. And so then I was like, well, I was reading Chicken Soup for the Soul. You remember that one?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Like, man, Chicken Soup for the Soul is so good. You can't hardly turn a page without having a laugh or a cry or just, you know, feeling emotional for the writer. And I thought, man, wouldn't it be cool if there was a Chicken Soup for the Soul for Jeep people? And I was like, all my Jeep people wrote stories. And I was like, wonder if I could convince my friends to send me stories of their favorite trail adventures and how it impacted their life, you know? And nobody bit. Actually, one guy did, but his story, he just couldn't write. Well, he wrote fine, but it wasn't good enough to publish, right? So I said, can I rewrite this for you? Because I was there with you. Let me just rewrite this. And he's like, yeah. So I rewrote his story and he loved it. And then I found another friend and I interviewed her just like you're interviewing me. I took the transcript and then I ghostwrote her story. And now I've written 47 unique stories of how the off-road community have helped people overcome everything from alcohol addiction to physical abuse. One of my interviewees was suicidal and he discovered the Jeep community and it helped him, you know, help save his life. And so I've put together these stories and it's called Tales from the Trails, Off-Road Stories of Adventure and Resilience. And that's really what the book is about resilience. So I'm pretty excited about this one.
So the children's books that you've written, they're not like Cat in the Hat. They're more of, I guess, something second, third, fourth graders would read.
Yeah. Elementary school is, and I love going to elementary schools and reading to the kids. And then I show them pictures of like the animation from the book or the illustrations from the book. And then I show them the real picture of my Jeep on that mountain and they go, oh, it's real. And it's the best moment ever.
I hope you've inspired some of them to read more and maybe you've got a writer out there.
I hope so. I think the whole world would be a better place if more people read books on a regular basis and, you know, wrote down the things that they've learned in their lives to pass along to future generations.
I remember in school when they would assign you those book reports and things like that. I hated reading because it was like they were forcing you to. But I picked up Pearl S. Buck, I believe, The Good Earth. And I couldn't put that book down.
And what's that about?
That's the one, it's supposed to be, I believe, in China. And this guy has taken a bride and he's acquiring land and stuff like that. But he's in love with this rich lady. And I think he's taken on a concubine and this kind of thing. It's been so long. I can't remember the exact story, but I went and bought the book so I could sit down and read it again.
Nice.
What's the most obscure thing you'd have in your collection?
Obscure? I don't know how obscure this is, but not a lot of people that I talk to have heard of this book. It's called Conversations with God by Neil Donald Walsh. And the premise of the book is that Neil was frustrated with his life. He was frustrated with religion, and he had grown up writing letters as a way of dealing with stress. Like he might write, if he was mad at me, he might write me a letter, but never send it to me. Just writing it was the cathartic process for him. And he wrote a letter to God. And he was like, you know, why are things always so hard for me? Why can't my life be the way I want it to be? Blah, 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 blah. And according to Neil, he was moved to continue writing after he was done writing the letter. And the words that the pen wrote on the paper were, are you just venting or do you want answers to these questions? And he said, well, yeah, I want answers. and he begins an actual conversation with God. And it's so, so powerful. It is incredibly powerful. And whether you buy the fact that it's really God talking to Neil or not is kind of irrelevant, because what the book teaches are like the building blocks of how to live a perfect life. It is the most impactful book I've ever read in my life.
Speaking of teaching, do you teach people how to write?
No, I sure don't. Never even thought about doing that. Nope. Got to just say no to that one.
Oh, well, see, I've inspired you. You're going to teach now.
Oh. All right. We'll see where that goes.
Well, anyway, do you have a website?
Yeah, I've got a couple. I've got davidmcbee.com, which is kind of my professional site. And it's got some links to my YouTube channel where I've got more interviews like this and some stuff about my children's books. And then the children's books, which I hope some folks will pick up because I'm really proud of those, are at djsoffroadadventures.com. djsoffroadadventures.com. DJ's Offroad Adventures.
Oh, and do you have social media?
Yep. And you can find me at David McBee on Instagram and LinkedIn, or at DJ's Offroad Adventures on Instagram and TikTok and Facebook.
Well, I'm going to put all those links in the description to make it easy for folks to find you. David, thank you. Man, I thank you. I appreciate the conversation.
No, I'm grateful for you, Kyle. I'm grateful for this opportunity. I'm grateful for our new friendship, and I really appreciate this. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And I also want to thank all you folks out there. If you are new to the channel, I hope you'll come back. Please hit that subscribe button for my regulars. You guys are awesome because you make it possible for me to do this. Until the next one, everyone, please take care. Be kind to one another. God bless and peace.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Listen to the Vibes. You can catch us on Buzzsprout or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, and on YouTube. Follow us on Facebook at The Vibes Broadcast Network.